Wednesday, January the 11th, 2012. The radio program is on the air. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's primetime on the Fan Radio Network, coast to coast, on Sirius around the world, and on Rogers Sportsnet, or just Sportsnet, as the case may be, in high definition. Bob McCowan, Damian Cox in our Toronto studios. A little bit later, Jerry Colangelo, chairman of USA Basketball, will join us. But for the first two segments, here is the president and managing general of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke. You are either the smartest or luckiest man I know. Every time you come in here, your team has just won two or three or four in a row.
Hey, man, you booked this last week. Don't give me that garbage. I don't pay to
say
how we're playing.
Is what you're saying.
We managed to win games. We did. When did we book this?
Over a week ago.
Yeah, so.
Well, so it's luck.
Don't come on when we're riding a wave.
Okay.
A wave.
Could go to Vegas then, because you're on a streak right now. I know there's a bunch of places we could start.
Yeah, let me start at one. Jumped into my BlackBerry. We want to ask him about it, so we'll blindside him with that one though.
As you are well aware, your organization, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, was sold. Now it's not, the deal's not completed. It probably won't get vetted until June or July, I'm told. But there is an opening for a president. With the departure of Mr. Petty. Are you a candidate?
No.
Are you a candidate because you don't want to be a candidate?
Correct.
Why don't you want to be a candidate?
I have a job.
I understand that. We all have jobs, but sometimes there are better jobs out there, Burke.
Why is this a better job?
Well, I don't know if it is or it isn't. You don't think it's a better job?
Well, it's not the job I like. The juice in this job is making trades and winning hockey games and watching you transform something. Team president is very different. You know, president, and I've been a team president. I am here, which is kind of fraudulent, the title I have here, because the business operation is run by an internal group that are outstanding. But I have been a team president where I have run the business and enjoy that side of it. I think I'm good at that side of it. There's no juice in that job like there is being a GM.
So it's the GM job that interests you rather than the presidency.
Correct.
I mean, you like the title.
Well, the title gives you cachet when you deal with business people. In other words,
I understand.
There's great value. Pat Quinn is the one who taught me that years ago. He said, get every title I'll give you, because then when you go to do a sponsorship deal with a bank or whatever, you're not just the GM.
Well, then there's one less person who can fire you, too.
We have owners.
Well, I get that. But still, you don't need, you need as many friends as you can above you on the pay scale.
I got to tell you candidly, this is the difference between you and me, maybe, or the businesses, but I have never thought of it that way once. I always felt I could get fired if I didn't do the job, and titles wouldn't insulate me from that.
So when you took when you came to Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, did they offer you the presidency, or did you ask for the presidency?
It was offered.
Would you have taken it if it wasn't offered, do you think?
I probably would have.
You would have?
Yeah, but not that thinking. My thinking is, you stand up in front of a group and say it's a charity event. You're introduced as a president and GM. Well, the people who don't know, they think, wow, he's president and GM. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if you're dealing in the corporate community and you're dealing with a president of a bank and you're trying to help the sponsorship guys close a big deal, it does help if you have the title.
I get it.
Put some weight, you know, it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think you found in this city, I don't think there's been a general manager, maybe Cliff, when he was, who was as involved in as many things in this city. You've really kind of tried to do as many things as you can.
I love it here. I love the city. I always have. I always, when my teams played here, we come here with Vancouver, Anaheim, or you know, whatever team. When I worked at the league, there's an aura about Toronto, and it's the center of the hockey universe. I know we're going to get all kinds of emails and but it is. It's a great city, and I feel very privileged and fortunate to live here. So, yeah, I've tried to be active in the community. That's part of, you know, one of the things I've always done. Wherever I've worked, I've tried to make a difference. So that's not going to change regardless of wherever I go or live. But here in Toronto, it's special. Like I was asked yesterday, what's the best part about being the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Mm-hmm.
I said living in Toronto. It's a fantastic city.
Now, you've hired a bunch of high-quality hockey guys, and a lot. I mean, the latest being Rick Dudley. Did you do that in your own mind? Because when Bob was talking about president, everybody eventually says, I'm going to move up and let somebody else do that. Did you do that at all, or have you done that at all with succession in your mind, that someday one of these guys will take over for me and I'll do something a little differently?
No. Now, to be fair, they're all guys that I think by the time I'm done, I have no intention of giving this up until I get canned. They're going to carry me out with my boots on. So I'm going to stay with it for as long as I'm doing the job, and whoever employs me at that time thinks I'm doing the job. And then I'd like to do something else for the Toronto Maple Leafs and stay on in some capacity. All of these guys are guys that could be GMs. Dave Nonis in particular has been a GM and would be, you know, was a candidate for every job that's been open since he came here. But we have put him contractually in a situation where he's not free to walk. The other guys have windows and can leave in certain times. And I have no doubt that we're going to lose Dave Poulin someday if we don't give him the proper title here. And I have no doubt that we'll lose Claude Lizelle and Rick Dudley. I have no problem bringing in people, giving them the right opportunity, and then watching them walk out the door, because then you have an ally for life with that team. So if Claude Lizelle hits a roadblock here and goes to be the assistant general manager, say he goes from the four hole, which he's in now, to the two hole with the Washington Capitals, we have an ally for life with that team. That's a team we can make deals with, we can converse with, we get information from. So there's value. If, you know, like, I've developed a bunch of young guys that have gone out and done well, and I'm proud of that. And
so some team fires their GM tomorrow, and they come to you and say, we want to talk to Dave Nonis. You say no.
No, the Toronto Maple Leafs are paying good dough for the right to say no to that. Dave Nonis is paid at a very different level than a lot of other number two guys, for, like Jim Nill with Detroit, for the right for us to say, no, you're not going anywhere. And by the way, what you just asked me has happened twice.
Really?
Yep.
And that
this season?
No, twice since Dave Nonis signed on with us. This guy is a top shelf guy. He will get his turn again, but in the meantime, he likes some stability. His son's at a prep school in New England.
Yep.
He gets to live in New Hampshire and come here and work, and he's got a great personal family setup, and I think he's very content.
What's the extent of that window of exclusivity? Does it open and close as it would with a player, say, in free agency? Is there a window during the summertime where
Dave Nonis?
Yeah.
No, he has no window.
So
the other guys have a window in the summertime.
Right, so to the extent of his until his contract expires.
Yep.
He can't go anywhere.
Correct.
Is this organization top-heavy?
How can it be top-heavy?
Well, by comparison to other organizations.
Well, you're in a hard cap system. You can't spend more on players. The only place you can use your financial clout is front office and scouting, and we've done that.
So you have, there's a perception of Brian Burke that Brian Burke is not necessarily a consensus builder, and that he doesn't suffer fools lightly, and that he is the decision maker. And yet you surround yourself with people who are of high caliber, well-respected, who are used to have, all but one of them, I guess, has had his own job, which defies the logic. So therefore, are you, in fact, a guy who leans heavily on their opinions and effectively chairs a board meeting a consensus?
You try to gain a consensus. Where you make the money in this job is if there's no consensus. It's easy when you got five guys around the table
who all agree.
And Rick Dudley, who's a great judge of talent, says, we should do this deal. And if everyone says we should do this deal, then it's a no-brainer. I pick up the phone. Where you earn your dough is where the staff is split. Now you got to make the call.
Right.
But no, I'm a consensus guy. I hire smart people. I leave them alone. I leave our coach alone. I mean, you asked Ron Wilson. I think I talked to him. Other than going down to talk to him about replacing assistant coaches, I think I talked to him twice between the draft and the start of the season.
Two more times than me. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, people ask me all the time on a game day, who's starting the net?
Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I said, you know who's going to start in net? The guy that comes out of the runway first. That's who's going to start in net.
Well, I mean, and now we've talked about the guys you have, and now you have a hockey team that's won four games in a row. You're in a playoff position, looking, I think, probably as good as the team has looked all year. Would you be reluctant to break this team up? Are you at the point now where you would say, this is what we've got, I believe in this team, we're going with this?
No. I'm not paid to get in the playoffs. I want to win a championship here. Getting in the playoffs, we could have done that last year. We could have traded our young players and gotten in last year for a couple of 30-year-olds. We could have gotten in the year before, too, I believe, if we traded all the kids. If you look at what's happened here, it's not just that we're in a playoff position today. We've been in a playoff position almost all year from the start of the season.
True.
We've only been out for a week or 10 days. I don't know the stats, but this is no fluke. You go back to All-Star. This group, I think, has enough to do it. Would I improve the group if I could, even if it meant taking someone out of the group? Absolutely. I'm not interested in making the playoffs and getting our asses kicked in the first round. I've done that. It's not much fun. I'm interested in getting in with a realistic, reasonable chance to win or bloody somebody's nose doing it, and use that round or two rounds or whatever we can do as a building block for a championship team.
Okay, so but I would say then that there is no evidence as yet that this team as currently constructed isn't the kind of team that could very well get their butt handed to them in the first round.
Correct.
So therefore, there's work to be done.
Correct. Well, that's what I just told him.
But I mean, so just to back up, though, I mean, are you saying that this team wouldn't be able to win a round?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is if I can add something to it that increases the likelihood they can win a round, I would not bet against this group in a playoff series. I think we're a little small up front. We don't have much playoff experience, but the way this team works and sticks together and makes things happen, I would not for a second, if the playoffs started tomorrow, bet against this group. That's not the question I was asked. I was asked is, am I done making deals? Hmm. And my answer is no. If I can improve this team tomorrow, I'm going to make a deal tomorrow that improves it.
Well, and you say tomorrow, your MO has been to make your moves well in advance of the trade deadline, which I think is February 27th, I think. Anyways, at the end of February, do you think there's more of a likelihood that something happens sooner if it's going to happen at all?
I don't know. You're right. My pattern is make those deals in January. I'm a January guy. I think the deadline is where we make, so as a group, I'm including myself, we make more mistakes at the deadline and on July 1st than we do the whole rest of the year. And to me, you get the math doesn't work at the deadline. There's 20 teams that are still, or 22 or 23 or 24 that are mathematically alive, and they're all buying. They're all adding.
Yeah.
And there's only one parade. Only one team has a parade, and they all make expensive purchases. They all overpay at the deadline. I try to do it, set the price, what we think is fair, and do something in January, and then let the team play together through the deadline. I have never been a big deadline guy.
So here's the dilemma. Up until now, you had to dismantle and build. And you're building foundation blocks to a great extent, because you start with ostensibly nothing. Now you have gone to a certain level. Are you now past looking for a kid who can help you down the road in the next 2 months? Does any acquisition you make now have to help this team immediately?
By and large, well, here, let me qualify that. They teach you in law school, if you're in court,
never ask a question you don't know the answer to.
No, they tell you if you don't know the answer, you say, Your Honor, it depends.
Oh.
So it depends. If I could get a kid that I really believe was going to be special, and it meant we gave up something off our team, but a guy that I think would be special, I'd always do that unless I thought we were going to have a parade. So I qualified a little bit. But in general, no, we are looking to add. Not futures. We're looking to add and get better now.
Do you have the ammunition to do something significant?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we have some kids. You look at the Marlies and how they're playing, and look at the kids in the system. I think we have depth. I think we have young assets. I do think there's room for age group asset trades. In other words, if you trade a 22-year-old and get back a 22-year-old who plays a different position, that's an age group asset trade. In other words, I'm not giving away any future. Now I'm making a bet on what it does for our team, but I'm not giving away any future. That's a possibility. So, I think you have, right now, we don't have a third or a fourth round pick, if I'm not mistaken. We do have a first and a second. I think we traded the other second in the Coverley deal for John Michael Lyles, and so on. So are we going to keep those two picks? Yeah, we're going to try desperately to keep those two picks. We got Bradley Ross coming. We got Greg McKegg coming. We got Colburn in the system, on and on and on, D'Amigo. So, yes, I think we have the depth to make a deal.
You, as I think you've learned, first-round picks are politically explosive in this town. What happens to them? Would you trade a first-round pick now for a player who you think could make you a more dangerous playoff team?
Where's the phone? Absolutely.
You would?
Yep. Well, at some point, Bob's question is the right one, but at some point, there's a critical mass you've put together, and you've got to add to it. The fans aren't stupid in Canada. The one thing they need to see is they need to see steel going up. They need to see a foundation. They need to see the building going up, and they can buy into the plan. And they can live with a gamble, too. They can live with, we'll play a first for a guy that might help us win around.
But at some point, you got enough foundation.
Exactly. And I think the answer to your question is, yeah, right now.
One of the pieces of that foundation, almost perhaps the most important piece, is the goaltender. You've got two. most people went into the season, or a lot of people went into the season, saying what happens to Leafs is going to depend on what happens to James Reimer. That hasn't turned out to be the case. Now Jonas Gustafsson's got the net, and he doesn't look like he wants to give it back. But would you be interested at all in adding a veteran goaltender that you thought could make a difference?
No, not at this point. And I'll tell you why. You said most people said it would depend on James Reimer. That's only partially true. Everybody said it would depend on James Reimer.
Did you?
Yep. And so to me, I told Jonas this. We had a Christmas function at Roots at the store on Bloor Street, and the Roots people are wonderful. And I said to Jonas, I said, just so you know, no one's written this, but just so you know you saved our ass this season so far. I know that. And I said, your teammates know that. And no one's written it, but you have been the difference between a great start that crumbled into dust and hanging on to a playoff spot.
Did that surprise you that he was able to do that?
No, we never counted on Jonas to be the starter this year. When we signed him, we had high hopes, and we never counted on him to be the starter this year because of the year that James Reimer had had. But we never discounted. We never looked for another goalie. We always felt he's a guy that could be the backup goalie and chip in with quality starts and help us. And now he's, like you said, he's grabbed the net. Every goaltender in the Hall of Fame grabbed the net from somebody. That's how that position works. It's like being a relief pitcher. It's the only job, a relief pitcher and a goalie, the only job where you audition every night. You have a bad night, guess what? If you get shelled, the other guy might not only start the next game, he might finish the game you're in. Marty Brodeur got yanked last night. Mm-hmm. So this is the peculiar nature of the position, that now Jonas has grabbed the net, and now James, next time he gets a start, he's got to try and grab it back. It's a wonderful position to be in if you have two guys that can play.
The president and general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke, is in studio. When we come back, at least a couple of topics. Dion Phaneuf and rats. This is Primetime on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius, and Sportsnet. Before past the hour, McConnell Cox on the radio program. Brian Burke, president, GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, in studio. So, Sports Illustrated, a noted publication, has conducted a survey of some 161 players to ask them who the most overrated player in the National Hockey League is. And the most popular response, ouch, Dion Phaneuf. Komisarek was number 10, yet two in the top 10. This is not a poll you want to have two in the top 10.
It's Sports Illustrated. They don't know squat about hockey.
When it was hockey, when it was the hockey news, they don't know anything either?
No, they know something about hockey, but what player votes in a poll
like this?
Like what imbecile, whoever filled out the ballot,
maybe yours,
has a room temperature IQ? Like, think about this. Like, if they sent me a survey, Sports Illustrated, well, they wouldn't because they don't know anything about hockey. They don't do hockey. They don't care about hockey. They don't understand hockey. If there's an article, it's page 72 and it's half a page. They have a wonderful writer, but he gets no space.
Michael Farber.
Anyway, so I get the survey tomorrow that says, who's the most overrated GM? You think I fill it out and crap all over one of my peer group? Yeah, you would. But that's why we're different. I would throw it in the trash. So the players that filled this out, my comment to you is, I'll speak slowly when I see you next because you're obviously a cretin. And the second thing is, how is he overrated? This guy's an awesome hockey player. How is he overrated?
Well, don't ask me.
What are you watching? You know what it is? People love to hate the Toronto Maple Leafs. They hate the fact we're the center of the hockey universe. They hate the fact that our fans are so loyal and wonderful. They love to hate this team. And both those guys are quality guys, and guess what? I am thrilled that they're on my team. And by the way, as I said to the Toronto Star, any player, any imbecile that voted in this poll that cares to discuss this with Dion can fly to Ottawa and discuss it with him at the All-Star game where he's a starter.
Well, it would seem to me that mathematically five or six of your players were involved in this survey. I wouldn't suspect any of them would have voted for either of their teammates, but nonetheless, you'd have to assume that there were at least some members of the Toronto Maple Leafs consulted.
There's 700, 800 players in the NHL. There's no reason to assume that out of these 161 imbeciles that any of my players were involved.
Wouldn't you agree, though, that Phaneuf, ever since he was in Calgary and now that he's in Toronto, has attracted an inordinate amount of criticism for his demeanor, his personality, the way he plays. I don't think that's unfair to say that he has been a somewhat controversial figure ever since he came in the league.
I think all he's done since he came here, I don't have the statistics. I think we're 14 games over 500 since he got here. All he's done is help us win. He's turned into a marvelous captain and leader. And so I don't care what issues he had before in Calgary. I could care less. I hear the rumors, oh, he doesn't get along with his teammates, this, that. I knew what we were getting. I watched him in the World Juniors. I coveted this guy as a player since I saw him play in junior hockey, and I'm thrilled he's here. Anyone who thinks he's overrated is not paying attention.
Well, look, and I expect you to say that, and you wouldn't say any differently even if you didn't believe it.
Who's the second player overrated?
Alexander Ovechkin.
Yeah.
Okay, and I would take issue with that. I think Alexander Ovechkin is a great. So I'm not just defending my guys. Here's a Russian.
Well, you're going to defend all of them then. Would you agree, if I gave you a name of a guy who was overrated, would you agree?
Yes, I would.
You would?
Yes.
Okay, give me the list.
Alexander Ovechkin is...
Scott Gomez. Overrated?
I think Scott Gomez would agree right now that he's not delivering at the level that he even liked.
And so the answer is yes, overrated.
Well, but I think the point is, though, too, is we're saying overrated, but really what in some of these we're talking about is, are they worth the money they're getting paid? And if they're not worth the money they're getting paid, are they overrated?
And that, I think Scott, Scotty's a great kid. I think Scott would even admit that at this point, that he'd like to produce more. He's a wonderful kid. But go back to this thing. Alexander Ovechkin, again, Russian guy, easy to hate, very physical player. I think he's a really good hockey player, even though he's not scoring.
Yeah, okay, Brian, but here's what I think
You're saying that this whole response of mine is weighted by the fact it's my player, and I'm saying that's not true.
Oh, well, okay, and then that's fair. So but I expect you to defend your players.
If Diamfanov were still in Calgary and this poll came out, I'd say the same thing.
All right, here's what I would say to you. I would say to you that, what does Leon make, 6.5?
6.5.
So, give or take? And... Ovechkin makes, like, he's shrugging his shoulders like he doesn't know. He knows to the penny.
He has no idea what his payroll is. No.
What does Ovechkin make? 10?
I don't know what the number is, but he's got a much longer. No, not 10, but anyways.
Okay.
Carry on.
It's based upon salary and therefore expectation.
Right.
And with Diamfanov, Diamfanov himself set the bar very high very early in his career. Then gets the big contract. Then doesn't play as well or doesn't produce as well, winds up being in a position where you get him. And I think most fans would say he's not back to that $6.5 million level yet. Now, you may disagree with that.
They're not watching them.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. But I think that's what this is about.
Fine. If the fans vote, I wouldn't take umbrage with the fans voting. They're entitled to their opinion. But for players to vote in a poll designed to somehow disgrace one player or 10 or whatever the list is.
You say players have no integrity.
What are you thinking? No, throw it in the trash. Why would you vote in a poll like that? It's one thing if the media does it. No, there's no reins on you guys. But why would a group combine collectively to dump on their own membership? Like if I were Donald Fehr, I would have a heart attack about this. Say, who votes in this?
Which brings us to an interesting point, because last year at the All-Star game in the draft, one of your players, I would argue, was embarrassed, and that was Phil Kessel, who went last.
Correct.
And Alexander Ovechkin was one of the guys on the stage who was kind of making fun of him, taking pictures. Was making fun of him, taking pictures. Do you think Phil Kessel will be added to the All-Star team tomorrow? And would you want him to participate in that draft again?
We have already had this discussion, Phil and I.
And
I expect him to be added. The league has not told me he will, but I'd be very disappointed if he's not. And I asked Phil, what are your intentions if you get into that situation? And he said, I intend to act with class at all times. He's not going to say or do anything that would embarrass another player. And that's Phil Kessel. This kid is classy.
What would you say to Ovechkin about his behavior last year?
I've been waiting for a chance to speak to him privately about it, and I hope I get that chance.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Kessel's going to get named?
I
shouldn't be any doubt, should there?
There shouldn't be. But
What about Lupo?
I'll be shocked if they're both not at it, both players. But I have not received that indication from the league. And having put together the All-Star teams for 5 years when I worked at the league, it is far from easy, far from simple. Everyone in Toronto says, well, of course those three will be on there. But Ottawa votes on four starters, so four spots are gone. And now so on. So it's tricky. So I would expect both players to be at it.
There was a time when you were involved. Sorry, Bob. Okay. Let me just get this in. There was a time where you were very involved in the All-Star format, and I think you devised a way to give money to the winner. Wasn't that part of your...
We tried that.
What do you think of the format now? Would you keep the All-Star game? Is it time to move it and make it the Winter Classic? Is it time to just dump it altogether?
Well, it's easy to say dump it because many of the contests are not exciting. There are no hitters. They're intra-squad games. There's no body checking. I can't remember the last time there was a fight. Maybe in the stands, but not on the ice. But what it is it is a showcase for our best players. It does have value to us. It has great value to our sponsors who invest a lot in that weekend. So, no, I wouldn't be in favor of getting rid of it. If they could figure out a way, we tried to pay the players, make it $5,000 a guy. We tried
everything.
Tried everything. And I think, you know, my view is that the NHL Players Association told these guys long ago, look, it's a no-hitter, and that's the way it's going to be. But I still think it's a good celebration of the game. The fans that go enjoy it. People at home are like, Jesus, 12 to 10. But no one leaves. Like, you watch the game, people stay and watch,
true.
And they are mesmerized by the skill level. There's no Brian Burks in this game. These are all good players.
You said it, not us.
There's that overrated word again.
No, look, and I mean, not dissimilar to Brian's position on this. The author of a best-selling hockey book, whose name escapes me, The 100 Greatest Hockey Arguments, suggested taking $10 million and putting
First
it in.
First him with the roots, now you with the product placement.
Taking $10 million, if he can do it, I can do it.
Oh, I know.
And put it in the penalty box. You know how they drag out the money in the final of the World Series of Poker? They put the money right on the damn table. Cash, money, right on the
Problem
table.
Is, though, how much would you
That's
have to come up with? How much would you have to come up with? These guys are so rich.
$10 million.
$10 million.
That's a half a million a player, give or take. Play my ass off for half a million, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
Giddy up.
Yes, I would.
There's the answer.
But I don't make $6.75 million.
So. Even if you did, half a million a game. Nobody making half a million a game.
I'm cheap enough.
Yet.
I would play for that.
Not yet,
man. So I just remembered why I invited you on last week, but you chickened out and didn't
before,
come till this
before
week.
We won. Before
won a bunch of, you had to wait till he won a few.
Had to wait till he won and got a winning streak. Rats, that's why. So you figure you have to make a move with Colton Orr and so now you go and you make it into a thing about how the game is all crap. And there's,
I didn't say that.
Yes, as you. Oh, you
I said
did.
The game no, was actually, better than it's ever been.
Yeah, but you said it, there's a bunch of pussies running around out there, and that nobody has truculence anymore, and nobody defends their own guys, and blah blah blah.
Correct.
That part. What the hell's that got to do with Colton Orr?
Well, it has a lot to do with Colton Orr. In my mind, this is. And by the way, this rant was made at the general managers meeting a year ago in March, where I said, "What are we going to do about the rats?" And it was a spirited discussion. I'm not alone on this. The average GM doesn't want to fight in the media. He doesn't want to have a controversial topic to deal with. We have enough on our plate. I just can't resist it. It's that Irishman. And I had enough of this. I've had enough of the rats running around and not fighting. And it used to be a player defended himself. In the old days, a player was expected to fight his own fights. Bobby Orr, greatest defenseman that ever played, had 54 fights as a pro, if I'm not mistaken. Like, that's a lot of fights for a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Back then, they fought their own fights. Then someone figured out it's cheaper to have a slug or a lower skill player defend that player, and we'll keep him on the ice for the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So then we fought each other's battles. Now, everyone turns to the referee instead of defending their teammates, and they want the penalty, and it ends up on Shanny's desk. Not a criticism of Shanny. I've read where people read this that I'm criticizing Shanny. I think he does a great job. But I don't think it should all get to Shanny. I think people should look after it, and we'd have less incidents. Like, you used to, if I hit you, I used to have to fear that you would fight me or someone on your team that's tougher than you would fight me.
McSorley would show up.
And there's no fear of that anymore. So this is why I think we're being inundated with cheap shots and headshots. These are players without honor. They are rats. They are gutless. And it drives me crazy that I have to send down a player like Colton. And mind you, he has deficiencies as a player. Skating's not that
really?
Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But great kid that does everything for his teammates. And I watch the rats
well,
now.
Let me ask you this. Would you have a rat on your team?
I've never had a rat on my team. I've told my players, you run around, you better fight. You better
There's
back
a,
it up.
A lot of people would say Corey Perry, the way he talks on the ice and what he does with his stick, is rat-like at times.
An MVP player with a little rat in him? I think he was the MVP last year. Yeah, I don't think people call him a rat. I think they call him an MVP.
No, but so you will. So their ability to play factors
in. When
it.
I had Corey Perry, he fought. I don't know how many majors he had that year. You can have your guys look it up. He fought his own battles. And he still does today. There's no rat in Corey Perry. Maybe a little sneaky as a player, but he's an MVP and he does fight.
Maybe a little sneaky. So you will agree that this isn't somewhat in the eye of the beholder.
Rats. No, it's not. I'm talking about guys that have no skill and run around and hit
Brian,
people.
Brian, there's always been those guys.
Yeah, and someone used to grab them and beat the snot out of them, and that doesn't happen
And they
anymore.
Kept going.
Yeah, well. So you might have a different view. I haven't asked you your opinion. You've asked me my opinion.
Because you're not interested in his opinion.
I'm not
neither
interested in his opinion.
Me neither.
I am when we have lunch,
he makes that
right
clear
now,
to
I'm
me
not.
Every conversation.
Me
He's
neither.
Not interested in what I think.
I'm with Burke on that one. I'm not with Burke on very many things, but on that one, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you and I are not on the same page on many things, Bob.
Listen, you know McSorley works for us now.
I do.
Yeah, so behave yourself.
I think Marty would agree with every word I just said.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Oh,
McSorley had a career because of that.
You know what? But Marty could play the game. Marty could play
He could
minutes.
Play a little bit.
Marty could play minutes.
Okay, we're running out of time. Let me throw out a few questions at him before we run out of time. Because we only got about a minute, right?
Yeah. No, we got a little bit of time. All we got 2 minutes.
Nazem Kadri, is he here to stay?
Looks like it.
So far, so good. I mean, he's been marvelous the last couple of games. We love this kid, but there's a risk factor in his game. And if he lets that creep back in, the turnovers and all that. But I'd say the way he's going north hard, and hopefully he's here to stay.
What's going to happen with Jonas Gustafsson and his contract?
Well, we'll wait and see. Like, I'm not going to sit down and talk about a contract when we're in flux like this. He's had a few good games. He could take the position he's this. I could take the position he's that. We'll wait and ride that out a bit.
Jake Gardner's not playing right now.
He will go to the minors and play if he doesn't get in the lineup soon. That's up to the coach. I've told the coach he cannot be in the press box for any prolonged length of time.
About this time a year ago, you told me that you were optimistic you'd be able to make a move of some significance, and you did. How do you feel now?
I think we'll be able to do something.
You're the hiatus is gone now. You've started addressing
the freeze
situation.
Ended on the freeze is 27th over. Or whenever our freeze ends the same time as the league, so 26th or 27th.
Okay, so you're in conversation.
Yep.
Would you say it's there's something on the burner?
Yep.
And you think you can be able to get something done?
Yep.
What are the names of the players involved?
And at what date do you expect to make this happen?
I can't believe you let this whole 2 segments go by. You didn't give him grief about his coach. You give me grief about his coach.
Isn't it amazing how no one's talked about my coach? Isn't that amazing?
Not no one, just not here.
It's amazing.
Because there's no point talking to you about the coach.
No, because it's the penalty killing is the coach.
You even acknowledge you don't even talk to him.
Seven straight penalties off, and now it's not the coach.
I knew
oh,
I could get
players.
It started. I don't it. Talk to him, and he doesn't even talk to him, which is probably he probably likes it that way.
He likes it that way.
That neither one of us talk to him.
He likes it that you don't talk to him, for sure.
That's great. You only gave him a one-year extension, didn't you?
I'm not going to comment on
it. You are the smartest guy I know.
You said you couldn't decide whether you're smart or lucky. That's how we started this conversation.
Are we done here? Can I leave?
You could have left anytime you wanted. No, you're not
I will
tired
say,
here.
It is a cool studio. One nice thing about coming here. It's pretty cool.
It's the one nice thing about
Loves
coming here.
With us. Come again anytime.
Berkey, you're always welcome here. Well, next time you win four in a row, we'll book a chair for you. There's the general manager and president of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke. More to come. It's Prime Time on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. Before the hour, McConnell Cox on the radio program. Our thanks to Brian Burke for joining us for the last 40 minutes in studio. We're going to go in the hallway and duke it out in a minute. Before we do that, so in the next short period of time, the USA basketball team will be announced.
For the London Olympics?
Yeah. And Jerry Colangelo, and we've talked to Jerry periodically over the years, and we've talked about this story, this concept of building over long term, getting guys to make a commitment over, like not just a week before or a month before or 6 months before, but years before. Be committed to the plan, to the program. Bring a coach in who's going to be with the program over an extended period of time. And so now the question is, has that been successful? Do you have the players that you want, and who do you select? And do you eliminate guys if they haven't been part of the plan, but who are clearly talented and deserve to be there based on that talent? Here's the chairman of USA Basketball. Here's Jerry Colangelo. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Nice to be with you again.
It's always our pleasure. So there's the question. What do you do?
Okay.
And do you well, let me ask you this first. Do you actually have a difficult choice? Are there guys out there who you think have not been necessarily cooperative, but based on their skill set, probably deserve to be on the team?
No, I think when the final roster of 19 or 18 or 20, I'm still undecided going into the weekend. You'll see there'll be a lot of names missing, and people will say and speculate, well, gee, why didn't he make it? Or why wasn't he one of them? And, you know, there's a reason behind everything. And let's put it this way. I have to turn the clock back, and some of this is redundant, I recognize, but you know, when I did take over the program in 05 after the debacle in Athens in 04, where the U.S. didn't do well, didn't act well, you know, it was kind of a disgrace. And I took on the responsibility. I recognized we had a change of culture. We had to show respect to the world basketball community, which we did. We had to put in new infrastructure. I wasn't looking to just do a team. I wanted to build a program, and you do it with solid infrastructure, and that's a coach and a coaching staff and commitments and all of those things. And by the way, Brian Burke, who I think is a terrific guy, and I heard you say that he just left the studio, when he took over his responsibility in hockey, he came into Phoenix and spent a day with me just to talk about this, you know, this exact topic.
Really?
Of how did I go about it? You just picking my brain, and he wanted to implement possibly some things into his plans. And as I look back on it now, we accomplished most of our goals and objectives in establishing who we are. And now we've created a circumstance where everyone wants to play. And it wasn't that way back in 04.
We're a little tight for time here, Jerry, but is this a democracy? Is Coach K involved in the decision-making process, or is it ultimately your decision?
Well, Coach K definitely is involved in the selection process. The buck always stops with me the way we're structured, but
sure,
we're joined at the hip, and we share in these responsibilities.
There is talk, Jerry, that this could be the best Olympic team the U.S. has ever put on, because you're going to have a lot of guys who are in their prime. Do you acknowledge that's a possibility?
I would say this. There's only been one dream team, and that's the way it should be. It was their time and their place in the world order, if you will. There wasn't a great deal of competition in 92 for that dream team of great players. The world basketball order has changed. There's a lot of competition, but we have a lot of talent, and I can see where there will be comparisons made, and let's just see how it plays out.
Here's my observation. You have some decisions to make at the guard position, but there's three or four guys that stand out. Same thing with the forwards. You don't have as much choice at center. Is that cyclical? Has it always been that way? Give me 60 seconds on the center position.
Very, very quickly, there aren't many centers in high school, college, or yeah, the pros in North America. There happens to be some in Africa and some in Europe.
Can you explain why?
There's a shortage. There's a shortage of them.
Is there a reason? I mean, it's like not like 7 foot guys are playing some other sport.
No, but I think the teaching fundamentals of low post basketball has gone by the wayside.
Right.
Now, for some reason, 7 footers want to play on the perimeter and shoot threes.
Yeah, well, I know of a couple of those. We have one right here. Jerry, it's always good to hear your voice. We'll watch with great interest over the next few days. You're going to make an announcement. Is it next week, you think?
Yeah, well, probably on Monday.
We'll look forward to that. There is the chairman. Right, thanks, Jerry. Talk to you again. Chairman of USA Basketball, Jerry Colangelo. Our thanks to him. Also, our thanks to Brian Burke for putting up with us for 40 minutes in studio.
Putting up with you.
Now let's go in the hallway.
I think he's waiting
and
for you.
And be truculent.
Or petulant, whichever comes first.
Hey, it's a day that ends in Y, but unfortunately it's an odd day of the week. Will you be here or
I
not?
Will be here.
It's a miracle, ladies and
gentlemen. I'm excited.
Govern yourselves accordingly. Check your local listings to find out what your options are. This has been Primetime on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet.